Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, we've come a long way in the past few decades in making books and other reading material very accessible for the blind and visually impaired. But one problem still remains quite often. In textbooks, you'll find many graphs and charts that just aren't very accessible. So today we'll be talking about a project to put that in a more accessible format for the blind and visually impaired.
We'll be speaking with Richard Ladner about his work to create tactile graphics with the embedded text converted to either Braille or speech. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's guest is a computer scientist, and as you may know, computer science has led to many improvements in accessibility for the visually impaired. Today's tip is to check out what computer science can do for you as a listener of Eyes on Success.
And one way you can do that is by searching through our archives. Now, you really don't want to do that by hand, since we have well over 200 episodes in our archives, but we put a handy search feature on our website, and if you enter a topic, a keyword, or even a show number, you'll be presented with a list of shows matching that criteria, and you'll get a summary of the show along with links to the audio on the show notes. And we don't want you to forget the show notes. Remember, they have all the information, resources, contact information that was mentioned in the show and can be a very handy way to track down all of that information without listening to the show again.
I don't know how much use our listeners make of this search feature, but I use it extensively. And for example, in this week's show notes, we will have links to several prior shows, and all I had to do was type in a keyword and the link to the show popped up, and that's where I got the link to put into the show notes. It's really handy.
So we hope you find that useful, and if you have any questions, don't hesitate to send an email to host@eyesonsuccess.net to ask us directly.
Let's start by meeting Richard Ladner and learning how he got into the field of adaptive technology.
My name is Richard Ladner. I'm a professor at the University of Washington in Seattle, where I've been for 43 years. I started my career as a mathematician, and I worked into theoretical computer science, and I did that for about 30 years. But I've always had in the back of my mind, you know, doing something with technology for people with disabilities, especially people who are deaf or blind.
How did you come to be interested in the disability field?
I guess I've always been interested in disability because I grew up with deaf parents. They were both highly educated. They were teachers at the California School for the Deaf in Berkeley. That's where I grew up. And so I got to know the deaf community through them. And I do know some sign language. I wouldn't say I'm super fluent, but I am fluent. And then as time progressed, you know, doing theoretical computer science was not as exciting. It was kind of incremental. So I decided I'd move on. And it was quite fortunate that around 2003 or 4, a student came to the University of Washington from Korea, Sang-Young Han, and he was blind. And so I got to know him pretty well and found out that one of the problems he was having with his courses was he wasn't able to get the figures from the textbooks. And so that really got me going on to this kind of technology, in particular the tactile graphics. And, of course, it's moved on to many other things as well. And I'm still doing tactile graphics.
We'll be spending most of our time discussing your research, but I understand you are also involved in some other activities with people who have sensory impairments.
I've done a lot of outreach work with both deaf and blind. I ran a summer academy for 7 years for deaf students at the University of Washington. And then I also, just recently in last summer, we had a workshop for blind people in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We call it Empowering Blind People in Science and Engineering. And that was a pretty fascinating event that had some really, really great outcomes.
So he's been pretty busy on behalf of people with sensory impairments.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Richard's research, including his work on tactile graphics.
So we've, of course, been to your website and seen your projects, but maybe for our listeners, you can give an overview of the types of research and programs that you've been developing, and then we can get into some more specifics.
Well, that's a great question. I think the majority of my projects deal with either blind people, low vision, deafblind, or deaf people, and just sensory disabilities. And it's just a fascinating area for research. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I started with tactile graphics. By the way, I worked also in image compression and video compression for quite a few years with Professor Eve Riskin in the EE department. And she came up with the idea back, I think, in 2006. Why don't we try to get, you know, video on smartphones, because smartphones had just come out, so that deaf people can talk to each other in sign language. And so we developed that. We called the Mobile ASL Project. Then as time went on, I found that students, you know, wanted to work with me, and they were really interested in accessibility. And so that kind of amplified the things I wanted to do. In fact, most of the ideas that have come up in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years have come from students. And you've met a few of them yourself. Jeff Digham, Sean Kane have all come up with wonderful projects. And, you know, my name is on the papers, but and certainly I contributed, but, you know, they were the drivers for those projects. I mean, one example is one thing you featured on your show earlier was Web Anywhere, which is a web service that is essentially allows anyone to listen to, you know, the text on a web page like a screen reader. So it's a screen reader for web pages, but it's, you don't have to download anything. You just go to a website called Web Anywhere, and from there you can go anywhere else and get your web pages read if they're accessible in the first place.
The other project that I thought was quite innovative at the time was VizWiz. Did you have a hand in that also?
No, that was after Jeff Bigham left University of Washington. He went to University of Rochester, and, you know, he was telling me about VizWiz. And I, you know, the first I heard of it, I really encouraged him to do that. You know, I think that sounds like a great project. So, again, Jeff is kind of, I call him a genius. He comes up with these great ideas, and that one turned out to be a winner. And it's the kind of product that could be very useful for many years to come.
For those of you that aren't familiar with the VizWiz app that you can obtain on Apple's App Store, it's a program that enables you to take a picture of an object, and it gets sent to either a computer or to humans who will tell you what the picture is or assess the picture for you. You can even ask such things as, how many people are in this room, and take a picture of the room. And of course, the computer won't be able to do that, but then it gets sent along to people who will actually text back an answer. So it's a useful program for the visually impaired. So I also noticed that you have a number of projects under your mobile category. So it looks like the smartphones have given you a good platform from which to branch out and try many innovative ideas without having to develop a lot of specialized hardware. Can you talk about some of those ideas and concepts you've been working with?
Sure. I can give you the sort of the big picture. This was, I think, maybe about 5 years ago. You know, the smartphones began to have more abilities. You know, they have GPS, they have accelerometers, they have, of course, microphones and speakers, they have this touch screen. So they have all these features that could be taken advantage of to solve an accessibility problem. And so I started this project called Mobile Accessibility. It's still going. And it's just basically to take the smartphone and try to turn it into an accessibility device. Now, what's really nice, I think, especially for the iPhone, is that it has a lot of built-in accessibility with VoiceOver and so on. So it's pretty easy to take advantage of that to make it accessible for blind people. If you have a good application that it follows the Apple guidelines for accessibility, then your app is automatically accessible. Also, I've always been interested in education. As an educator myself, and, you know, tactile graphics was an example of an education project. And way back, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, undergraduate, I gave an undergraduate a problem. I said, well, how would a deaf-blind person use a touchscreen? Somebody who's both deaf and blind. So what is there on a smartphone that they could use? Well, the only thing they could use probably was the vibration system. So he came into me one day, he was just an undergraduate, and he showed me this Braille on a touchscreen. And, you know, you have the six dots of Braille completely filling the touchscreen. And if I, you know, the letter R was on, then that would be, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5 in Braille. And those places on the smartphone, when you touch them, would vibrate. And the other positions, 4 and 6, would not vibrate. So you could actually transmit Braille to a smartphone. And so that evolved into a project we called Vibrating Braille, or V-Braille. And it turned out we just wanted to develop some games that encourage Braille literacy in blind children. So we developed a bunch of games, and they can be downloaded from the iTunes or from Android. And they're just to take advantage of this vibrating Braille and to help blind children enjoy and have fun and learn the Braille concepts at the same time. It's not quite the same as, you know, reading Braille on paper or on a refreshable display, because you really need good tactile acuity for that and build that up over time. But this is just for the Braille concept. What does the letter R look like?
So it's a great literacy tool and learning tool for people who are new to Braille, particularly youngsters.
Exactly, yeah. So tactile graphics, V-Braille, these were education-focused.
Can you tell us specifically how some of your concepts about tactile graphics work? I understand you have a project where you scan in images that have text on them, and then you somehow convert that to Braille to make it something that the blind person can interact with.
Yes. You know, the impetus for the tactile graphics project was the realization that textbooks, especially college-level or high school-level textbooks, have a lot of meaningful graphics in them. For example, there was a pre-calculus book that we worked on that had about 1,200 figures in it. And mostly they were line drawings. Maybe they had some areas filled in with colors and things like that. But the current practice for producing tactile graphics was either using, you know, little tactile graphics kits, and maybe using things like pipe cleaners and tactile objects and glue them on paper, and, you know, they're one-offs. Another popular method is to use tracing. So you get a figure and you bring it up on a computer, and then you create another layer, and then you trace the figure on that. And then you'll also have to type in the Braille as well for the text. That's tracing. And then eventually that could be printed on a embossing printer like a Tiger Embosser out of Oregon. And there's other embossing printers as well. So these embossing printers, they do both the tactile graphics, so they emboss the sort of lines, make them high, a little bit high, so you can feel them, and they print the Braille as well. And so now you have a complete tactile graphic. But again, those are one-offs. You know, you have to have some person doing that.
A lot of manual effort involved.
Yeah, so you can imagine doing 1,200 of these. So it would take a very long time. So I wanted to accelerate that process. Can you automate some of this, so that, you know, it doesn't take so much human effort? And that's what we did for the tactile graphics project.
How did you manage to automate the process?
The idea was to use some computer vision and machine learning, which are techniques from computer science, to analyze the image ahead of time and find out where all the text is in the image, remove that text, but remember where it belongs. Now, that text can be converted to Braille. First, it has to be OCR, right? It has to be optical character recognized. And once it's recognized, then it can be translated to Braille fairly easily using some automated products. So the part we developed was, how do you extract the text and determine where it is on the thing? And we did that by using, you know, some basic computer vision and machine learning techniques. So, for example, of these 1,200 figures, there might be a group of them, you know, a couple of hundred, that are very similar, like parabolas and different line drawings of functions. And you could take them as a group, say 200 of these figures, take them as a group. You could do some training on a few of them, to train them what do letters look like, and then use that training to extract all the text from all the other 200 figures. So for the pre-calculus book that we worked on, we were able to do all that work and create a tactile graphic in about 6 minutes per figure by using this sort of automated technique. So I always like to use the analogy that, you know, back in the day before Ford Motor Company, you know, basically automobiles were one-offs. And so they were very expensive. And you couldn't get an automobile that quickly. It might take a year for it to be built for you. And then automation came along, and Henry Ford said, well, why don't we just make a whole bunch of them at once and have an assembly line? The idea clicked, and the price of automobiles came way down so that the workers at these Ford Motor Companies could actually afford to buy one of these cars. So it's kind of like the same for tactile graphics. If you could figure out ways to automate the process of producing tactile graphics, maybe you won't get the best tactile graphics out of it, but at least you'll get them all. And that's what we were looking for. And they're pretty good. You know, there might be some errors here and there. I have to admit, though, you know, I have a lot of respect for the people that have been doing tactile graphics over the years. And, you know, I've met some of the people that they're professionals, and they really care about what they're doing. Maybe, you know, the current workforce of tactile graphics experts isn't really the right workforce for this automation. It might take a new workforce, but, you know, it will happen over time. I just don't know when.
So these days, most books are created on a computer, and the publisher has a digital file describing everything on every page of every book. Is there a possibility that you could get the digital figures and kind of short circuit even the remaining longest parts of the process that you do?
Yeah, that would be great. I don't know if there's a single standard for these figures. They're drawn in by different artists in different systems. They may not be, you know, if you like, a vector graphic or something that is sort of already computerized. It might be, you know, a hand drawing, for all I know, what is the original. And so the thing that's in the textbook is just a rendering of that. So it depends. Maybe as time goes on and the methods of producing the figures and textbooks becomes more standardized, that might work. What does work is that you have the image of the figure, and we have a lot of image processing. We're doing a lot of that now, so that you can extract that information by using optical computer vision techniques. It's just faster to do that now than it would be to go back and look at all these different ways that people produce these figures and try to standardize there. You know, going back to the source would be best, but I'm not sure we're quite ready for that.
So this is being done at the research stage now. Do you have interest from some of the Braille embossing companies to integrate some of these processes into producing textbooks?
Not yet. I haven't had any contact with them. I have had contact with other people, though. There's a group in Seattle that would like to extract information from figures generally to make these figures searchable, for example, on the internet. And so I think that's where there might be some, you know, more leverage. So the textbook companies might not be interested, but the search companies are interested.
Mm-hmm. Most research does have its spinoffs, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
We first became aware of this project through a webinar that Benetech hosted, and you called the project Tactile Graphics with a Voice. But the work that you've been describing so far has been tactile graphics with Braille. What does the with a voice part do?
That's a good question. So a lot of blind people can't read Braille, so their access to figures with Braille on them would still be limited. So instead of having Braille, we thought of the idea of putting QR codes. Now, a QR code is like a little barcode that can just hold textual information. On most smartphones, you know, you can download an app that will read a QR code. And if it's a URL, it might even take you to a website or something like that. So we just decided that why don't we try that, see if it'll work. And it did. So you can take the text in a figure, and instead of the text, you would replace that text with a QR code. And then with a QR code reader that talks, you can get the same information from the figure. So with one hand, you would be feeling where the QR code is. And, of course, you'll know the tactile graphics that's near it because you've sort of observed it with your fingers. And now you want to know what it's all about. Then you can point your phone and capture the barcode you're pointing at, and then it'll read back what that says.
So my concept of a typical figure in, for example, this pre-calculus book, is you'll have a curve and there will be two axes, and each axis is labeled with a bunch of numbers, and then there's a name for the x-axis and a name for the y-axis and maybe even a name for the figure overall, and maybe even some more lettering on the curve itself. You've got a different QR code for every single block of text?
That's right. That's our original concept.
Wow.
So basically, they're tiny barcodes. If you look at the area that one of these barcodes takes, it's typically less area than the Braille would take. So it's not an excessive amount of area. The hardest part is if you're blind and you're using a camera to look at the barcode you're pointing at. And so that's what our students have developed. It recognizes your finger, and then the QR code that's nearest to your finger, it'll read out.
Oh, that's neat. But that's a great idea, using the barcodes, because, I mean, as I was thinking about embedding some of these captions in figures, Braille takes up a lot more space than print, and somehow you need to squash a lot more information into a smaller space in order to not overrun the picture with Braille.
Right. And the barcodes are a little square area, and text, you have to figure out where to turn the line, and you know what I mean? You have to figure out how to make it as square-like as possible. Actually, it never comes out square-like, because you want that text to be near the item it's referring to in the tactile graphics.
Right.
Right. Well, and in many print figures, a good fraction of the text is actually sideways, and that doesn't work so hot in Braille.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we had to deal with that in our original tactile graphics project, is that the text is often at an angle. So we used a little linear algebra to solve that. So I went back to my math days. So you have to find the sort of principal eigenvector of the direction of the thing and then rotate the text that angle, and it'll become horizontal, which then can be read by a optical character recognizer. So, you know, that was kind of a challenge, but the QR code, they'll all be square, so the angle won't matter that much. You just put it where the original text was.
So what you've been describing so far is tactile graphics, but it seems like a lot of the same logic and ideas ought to apply to using digital images on a smartphone. For example, being able to tag certain locations with text that's kind of hidden from a sighted person's view, but if a blind person touches it, it could tell you what the text is. Or similar to your Braille concept of knowing where the dots are, you could tell where the line is on a curve by following it that way. Have you thought about applying some of these concepts to the digital realm?
I have, and other people have done a lot more than I have. I saw a demonstration of doing I'll call it a tactile graphic on a tablet. And he was showing Ed Summers, I think his name is, he was showing sort of a scatter plot, you know, where you have lots of points.
Right.
And you'd like to sort of view them all. And as you touch the screen, of course, you don't feel any points, but it'll read out the points to you, you know, as you touch the points. And I think it vibrated as well, so you could kind of feel the points as you move across them, your finger. So you get some idea of the scatter plot, even though it's on a flat screen.
Hmm.
So I think there are some tactile graphics that might be suitable for a flat screen using vibration and speech, but I don't think it's general. I'm not sure that all tactile graphics can do that.
These mobile apps that we've been talking about, are they available for Android or iOS or both?
Both. There's some are available in iOS and some are available in Android. We haven't pushed out that many, but for example, the app for reading the QR codes is in iOS. And it's called TGV, Tactile Graphics with Voice. So if you do a search on that, that one is still needs more development. It does not include the finger pointing part of it. So we're planning to add that later.
So you said the source code was available for some of these. Does that mean you're looking to open source or community create some of these things further?
If somebody wants to develop them further, they can. I forget what license they have on them, but, you know, it's an open source license.
Okay.
Well, you may be surprised at the response you get.
Oh, really? Uh-oh.
We've got some pretty talented computer programmers listening to this show.
That's good to hear.
Well, and I think it's kind of neat, some of these community coding things. I mean, I help people do these things too. You know, like there's some music production software that's pretty sophisticated, not really accessible for the blind. But, you know, there are a number of us around the world that just contribute small parts of code to create JAWS scripts to make it more accessible, for example. And,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of neat when people can pull their resources together from around the world. The internet has really made a big difference in that regard. And you can accomplish some great things that way.
Mm-hmm.
If I look on the App Store for the iPhone, then what do I look for?
You can look under VBraille, V as in victory or V as in vibrating braille.
Mm-hmm.
There should be some apps there. There should be a Perkinputz app.
Perkinputz. Okay, I will check those out. Because like I said, on your website, it had links to, in fact, it looked like you were offering the source code for some of the Android things on your website, but I didn't see the iPhones.
For the iOS, we're also offering the source code.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Richard Ladner's research programs and how to contact him.
So if people want to find out more about some of your research or get in touch with you, where should they go?
I'll tell you the easiest way is to search for L-A-D-N-E-R or Richard Ladner on Google search, and it should come up pretty high on Google search. That's what I'd recommend to people. But if you want to contact me, I'm at ladner@cs, that's like computer science, .washington.edu.
Okay, great. And we'll have all of those links and contact information in our show notes associated with this show.
Yeah. And I'm happy to take phone calls too at 206-543-9347.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. So again, check out the show notes for that information and to links to his websites and those other resources, especially if you want to help develop some of those applications. And we'll also have links in the show notes to previous episodes where we talk with some of Professor Ladner's students, Jeffrey Bigham and Sean Kane, and you can learn about their research in accessibility.
That's it for show number 1510. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about blind golfing. We will feature Ty Thompson, who is the past board member of the United States Blind Golf Association, their current webmaster, and a three-time national champion in the B2 category. And as he will explain, there are several levels of blindness in which people compete. So this will be a lot of fun. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.